The UFC Buzz Podcast with Gareth A. Davis. Exclusive to William Hill. Listen online at audioboom.com or subscribe at iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts.
Welcome to another UFC Buzz podcast for William Hill. I'm Gareth Davis, otherwise known as The Warlock from time to time. Joined this week by the one and only Chamatkar Sandhu, European correspondent for ESPN. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to look back very quickly at UFC 225, the great win for Robert Whittaker against Yoel Romero, middleweight title, of course. Colby Covington delivering on those vast promises against Rafael Dos Anjos, and then indulging in a bit of smack talk with Michael Bisping. We'll come to that in a minute. Michael Bisping, as our broadcaster, now retired, of course. Fine performance by Holly Holm, and we move this weekend to the country of Singapore. We go Southeast Asia, and of course, Malaysia. And of course, it's a very big time because we're moving towards the summer international fight week for the UFC. We're right in the middle of a busy period. Chamatkar, how are you, my friend? And thank you for joining me.
I'm very well, Gareth. Good to be here. Can't complain, really. The sun is blazing. The weather is gorgeous here in England. The World Cup is on. And, you know, it's a good time. Whenever there's a big international event taking place during the summer, it's a down period. And you kind of combine that with our 24/7, 365 MMA and combat sports schedule. It's always a good time.
Well, I'm here in San Francisco. I'm doing an American tour at the moment of a month where I'm doing all kinds of events from that international fight week for the UFC in Las Vegas, Bellator event, of course, and off to New York next week for a major press conference. Look, let's start, my friend, with let's go back to UFC 225 at the United Center in Chicago, Illinois. Just a quick comment from both of us, just to recap on that one. I thought Robert Whittaker was fantastic in the fight. He was taken to the wire again by Yoel Romero, and I think the rightful man won. I know it was a split decision, but I thought Whittaker deserved the decision. He's become a brilliant champion in the middleweight division, but I think, you know, the key now is to see him against those guys, in my view, who he hasn't faced yet. It's a Chris Weidman we need to see him against. And that's really about it. Chris Weidman, maybe Kelvin Gastelum, but that's about it now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. In terms of who we should go and fight next, I prefer the Weidman fight over Gastelum. But what Whittaker's done again is just shown his heart, grit, you know, guts and determination to come through a war, 25 minutes with Romero, come out the other end, still the winner, still the champion. And now he's had, you know, two back-to-back, you know, potential fight of the year candidates with Romero. And Romero certainly, you know, has played his part. Unfortunate that he couldn't make weight and there were some issues coming into the fight. And it wasn't technically a title fight, so Robert Whittaker doesn't technically have a title defense on his record. But his stock has definitely risen now with these two performances against Romero.
No, I do agree with you. And also, I mean, maybe there's a Luke Rockhold fight to have there as well, of course. I mean, like you say, 50 minutes with Yoel Romero, and he's really proven himself in lock, stock, and smoking barrel, frankly. The other thing I'd like to see now is Colby Covington, who looked very good in the co-main against Rafael Dos Anjos. He was tenacious. He never gave Rafael Dos Anjos any space, any time to think. He dominated him. I know it was 48-47, but I thought it was a deserved 49-46 result for me. He's got the interim title now, of course, and for me, really does deserve a major shot at this whole situation. He's obviously ranked number one to Tyron Woodley's belt. Moved up from number three. Darren Till sitting in there at two. Rafael was the number one challenger at the time. I thought he was very, very impressive. I don't know if you agree.
I do, 100%. Rafael dos Anjos was looking like a man possessed at welterweight since moving up from 155 pounds. And for Covington to put on the kind of performance he did against RDA, and then A, to get the interim belt, but then to continuously prod and poke at Woodley, and now Woodley's finally taken the bait, and he's responded, and he's reacted. And what we've got now is a potential unification title bite with history, with emotion, with drama, which ultimately will lead to ticket sales and sales of pay-per-view buys. So it's a great fight we've got on our hands, the UFC has on their hands, and I can't wait to see it. I think it's going to be really competitive. And yeah, good for Covington. And the good thing about him is, yes, you know, he's not indifferent. He's polarizing. You've got some people that like him, some people that don't like him. You know, he is wearing the Make America Great Again, you know, baseball cap. He wants to kind of go to the White House, and I think that'd be great if he did. To have a UFC champion in the White House with the president, that visual, that story, that moment, that video would just go viral. And it'll just put an even bigger spotlight on both Covington and the UFC.
I would beg to differ at the moment about going to given what Trump's done with the Mexican border arrests and separating. I think there may be a time to do it, but I think given the latest move by the president where he separated children from their parents, well, it will make him more polarizing. But I mean, I don't know. I have, as Martin Luther King said, rights aren't for another day, they're for today. And the rights are that there are wrongs going on with people on the border at the moment, immigrants who are separated from their children. That's a whole nother political show, of course, Mr. Sandu. It's a different kettle of fish altogether. But I tell you what was also fairly political, and I thought it was pretty classless of Michael Bisping calling Covington, even though it was great TV in a weird way. He stuck when Bisping and Covington indulged in the smack talk themselves from studio to post fight interview. It just didn't sit well with me. I think it's poor broadcasting. I thought it was classless, frankly. I know it made waves, but I don't think Bisping needs to do that. You don't smack talk someone when you've retired, you're not in their division, and you're a broadcaster. I don't know what your take is on that. I thought it was classless.
Well, look, I think what we've seen during the Fox Sports era with the UFC partnership is a lot of retired but also current fighters sit in that analyst desk spot, and they're interviewing fellow UFC fighters, perhaps sometimes even in their same division. Maybe they're not in the same division, maybe it's an opposing camp or someone that you perhaps have some history with. And so they're going from a situation where they're a combat sports athlete to all of a sudden sitting in a desk on Fox Sports on TV without perhaps a polished professional broadcast background or any experience. Now, with that being said, Bisping's done this for quite some time, right? So it wasn't exactly his first day on the job. My take on it was pretty much similar to yours and other fellow members of the media. Perhaps he should have not gone down that route with Covington. It was Covington's moment. He just won the title. You know, make it all about that particular moment and not about anything else.
No, I agree. Listen, Michael's been doing it a long time. I've done broadcasts with Michael. He's brilliant. He's great on TV. Don't get me wrong. He had a brilliant career. I covered the entire thing. And I support him, and you know, I celebrate his career. He's the greatest British mixed martial artist of all time, the most achieving, all those things. In fact, outside the man we're going to talk about, Leon Edwards and Darren Till, and you know, the returning Connor from the kind of British and Irish shores, we haven't got many others at the moment really fighting at the very top level. But if it was wrong, I'm sorry, it was wrong. It didn't come across right. It's different, like you say. There's a lot of fighter analysts at the moment working TV, but it crossed a boundary that's not right. And you know, a broadcaster working with him, a professional, experienced broadcaster, would have shut him down. because it's wrong, frankly, and that's the end of it. Great fighter, a great servant for British MMA, but I just it just that's not the signal you want to send out to. That's not the signal I want to send out, Mr. Sandu, to other journalists working in the industry. Do you know what I mean? Other broadcasters working in the industry. Because it's a TV broadcast, and I think that is that, you know, it's a bit like Darren Till going off with a ton of expletives on the night he was interviewed in the Octagon in Liverpool, when, you know, it's a showcase, that moment. And, you know, I think 80% of his words in that short interview were having were bleeped out because it was live on television in the afternoon in America, you know? That's the difficulty with those kind of things for me. Enough said, anyway. But it was a great event. And also, great performance by Holly Holm, by the way, against Megan Anderson.
Absolutely. And I think Holly Holm has once again put herself into a position now where she could potentially fight Cyborg, 145 pounds, or she can go back down to 135 pounds and get that rematch with Amanda Nunes. Options are plenty for Holly Holm, and again, I think she's somebody that the UFC would like to utilize sooner rather than later, because she does move the needle. She was the one that got that highlight reel head kick knockout of Ronda Rousey, and ever since then, you know, I'm sure you see the traffic on your site and you know the content that you put out when it comes to Holly Holm. She definitely, you know, moves the needle. People are interested in her, interested in seeing her fight and her story.
Oh no, there is, because there's a great timeline going back to the very famous promoter. Don Chargin, who I was with last weekend, his cohorts, and she's boxed on Don Chargin's cards before. She's an incredibly adept and accomplished martial artist in several of the martial arts. No, she's brilliant. I mean, she's just she's a beautiful person and a beautiful fighter. Frankly, I just thought her performance against a much bigger opponent, you could see that with Megan, or Megan, as we would say in England, you know, the Americans call her Megan. She's just a much bigger physical specimen. I thought it was a tremendous performance. Look, final thing on the news of the week, George St. Pierre versus Floyd Mayweather. Kind of, for me, I know that Fira Sahavi put it out there on an interview. He didn't kind of push for it, but he put it out there in an interview that he was, you know, he talked to George St. Pierre about it. My feeling was yada, yada, yada. Like I do really about a rematch in boxing between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. I would support, cover, go in deep with Floyd Mayweather having a go at MMA against Conor McGregor, whether people like it or not, whether they think I'm bonkers or not, I would, because I think the return rubber in the other sport would be fine. I don't want to see a rematch in boxing, but I just don't think George St. Pierre against Floyd Mayweather works at all.
No, and I'm not reading too much into it. I thought it was a nice little soundbite from Zahabi. Obviously, you put GSP and Mayweather in a headline for a story or an article, it's going to do traffic. It's going to get clicks. We've seen the novelty of a crossover fight with McGregor and Mayweather. And, you know, we saw how that turned out. It was, you know, a one and done. They made lots of money. But I want to see GSP stick to MMA. Of course, he's in a period of inactivity, and I'm sure he's negotiating with the UFC in terms of, you know, if he is going to return, what weight class, which opponent, and things of that nature. So I guess in the interim, for Zahabi to do him the favors and just keep his name out there in the spotlight while, you know, all this kind of stuff behind the scenes goes on, I think it's a smart move on his side. But yeah, I'm not interested whatsoever in any type of fight, whether it's boxing or MMA, between GSP and Mayweather.
Yeah, nice call, Mr. Sandu. Okay, so we move to UFC Fight Night, Cowboy versus Edwards, otherwise known as UFC Fight Night 132, coming up at the Singapore Indoor Stadium in Kallang, Singapore, this June the 23rd. Look, former lightweight championship challenger Donald Cerrone against Leon Edwards, obviously the headline event on the card, but we're going to go to the first a fight on the main card. Li Jingliang against Daichi Abbey at welterweight. Li Jingliang, most people will remember, of course, for the horrible eye pokes of Jake Matthews, who he lost to on decision in Perth, Australia, back in February. An interesting fight. Odds with William Hill, 8-11 3-10 for Li Jingliang, and Daichi Abi 5-2. Li Jingliang obviously came into the UFC under the auspices and the training of former UFC lightweight Zhang Tianquan. I don't know, he's blown hot and cold for me. And never really risen to that level. Jake Matthews was a good challenge for him, but Matthews is a guy that came out on top in the night.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy because obviously, you know, a lot of controversy in that last fight with Jake Matthews, but since then, he actually signed with Paradigm Sports Management. For those that don't know, that's the same group that manages Conor McGregor, Michael Bisping, Tony Ferguson, Michael Venom Page. So clearly they've seen something in him in terms of his drawing power and his pull power and his star power in that region. And the UFC continuously book him there as well. I think this is probably going to be a good fight for him in terms of a bounce back. I hold my hands up high. I don't know too much about Daichi Abi, so I'll definitely favour Jingliang to get the job done on fight night. Hopefully this time he can do it without any controversial eye posts and things of that nature. I'll put a caveat to that to say, in MMA, it's very easy to quote-unquote cheat and then get away with it. It's the job of the referee to enforce the rules, to perhaps be a bit more stiffer with the punishment in terms of taking a points away immediately, because, you know, whether it's a kick to the groin or grabbing the fence or an eye poke, sometimes in those situations the damage is already done. And what good is just a verbal warning when the opponent perhaps has now got impaired vision for the rest of the fight? So it's always an interesting debate to see how a referee can enforce the rules. And obviously, it wasn't any good PR for Jingliang in terms of the reaction from the fan base following his last performance. So hopefully he can win in a cleaner fashion this time around.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Daichi Abi, obviously Japanese, from Niigata, 6-1, lost his last time out, 5'11", 26, 170 pounds, of course. He got 4 KOs. 2 decisions, so, you know, he'll have good, decent grappling, as all Asian fighters do have, of course, because he'll have judo in the background, but he will come to strike. This will be a massive striking battle, in my view, with a little bit of clinching. But the problem I had with that entire card, believe it or not, Mr. Sandu, is that I was very unhappy with the manner in which that whole card was refereed back in February. Anyway, enough said about that. I'm going to pick Li Jingliang myself. As I say, the odds with William Hill, 3-10. But don't be surprised if Daichi Abi is able to pull off a victory at 5-2. Women, moving to the women's flyweight, Jessica Rose Clark putting a bit of a run together at the moment. Three fight winning streak. Karina Dam, Beck Rawlings and Paige VanZant, no mean feat there, fighting Jessica I, who has bounced kind of back and forth, a 4-fight loss streak, which was terrible at the time against Misha Tate, Juliana Pena, Sarah McMahon and Betch Correa. Win against Karindra Faria back at flyweight. This is a good fight for me. Odds of William Hill, Jessica, the Australian Jessica, 8-11, and the American Jessica, 11-10. Good fight, this.
Yeah, and I always felt as though Jessica I was undersized at bantamweight, and it was great to see that she made a return at 125 pounds, a division that UFC now has for the women, and she was able to get back to winning ways, and I think this is the right weight class for her. But she's going up against somebody in Jessica Rose Clark, like you said, Gareth, who's riding a 3-fight win streak, you know, most notably her last performance against Paige VanZant. So yeah, she's coming into this fight with a hell of a lot of momentum. A good scrap, a good contest at flyweight. Jessica Rose Clark, look, I think if she wins, you know, she could potentially put herself in a situation where she could be a number one contender and perhaps later on in the year, you know, fight for that UFC flyweight championship.
Yeah, well, it's number 9 versus the Australian Jess is number 9 in the rankings, and Jessica I is 10, I think, at the moment. So, it might not move her too far up the up the rankings, but it's certainly, you know, there's a lot of girls in front of her yet who, you know, Barb Honchak, Liz Carmouche, all these kind of guys, Chukagian, Lauren Murphy, Alexis Davis, all those guys, Sejara Banks, Eubanks. There's so many fights out there for so many, almost like tried and untested, really tried and untested women. There's massive opportunities in the division. Do you know what? Given the travel zone, given that I'm going to go for Jessica Rose Clark based on the fact that Jessica is traveling to Singapore for this contest. And I think Jessica I for me tends, I mean, I'm a huge fan of hers. I'm a good friend of hers. She tends to fight in the same way. Obviously, she's from the same camp as Stipe Miocic. She's got a great team behind her. But once she gets in the heat of battle, Mr. Sandu, she just likes to stand and trade. And I don't know, what I've not seen from her enough in her career is clever countering. If she could counter cleverly, I would see her moving up the division the whole time. I think she's got a decent ground game. I think they'll have a fairly even ground game. Rose Clark is southpaw, of course, as well. So that might play into her hands in a decent way as well. You know, Jessica is an orthodox stance. But I don't know if the Ohio girl's going to do it in this one. I'm going for Jessica Rose Clark to do this. She's 8-11 with William Hill. I think she'll win it by split decision, or not a split decision, 29-28, but it could be a split decision. And I think Jessica Rai may well dip out. How do you see it?
I'm picking Jessica Rose Clark as well. I think she's the one that's coming into this fight, like I said, with momentum. I don't know how Jessica Rai perhaps will handle the travelling there as well. And just a quick note on the rankings, the division is still so young.
Yeah.
It can fluctuate you know, drastically, you know, fight on fight, because we haven't seen too many women's flyweight fights take place in the UFC right now. So maybe after this, if she wins, maybe she'll need one more to put herself in title contention. But given the win streak, given the fact that she's probably got more flyweight fights under her belt in the UFC since the division was launched, I think that'll put her in good stead. So I'm picking her as well.
Nice. So we move to the co-main event. A very interesting fight for me. because Ovince St. Preux at light heavyweight against Tyson Pedro. Again, I think it's the number 7 ranked Ovince St. Preux OSP against the 13 ranked Tyson Pedro. Very interesting, because it's hard to pick against Ovince St. Preux, because when he's up against the very high level contenders, he seems to just be short of that kind of John Jones, Cormier level. Yeah, maybe even, I'd say, even against Jimmy Manua, he had issues, of course. But I do think that he's a very, very clever fighter. He's very dangerous. He lost last time out, of course, to Ilia Latifi. But I do feel that Tyson Pedro is very well matched against him. But he may not have the skill set to defeat OSP. Having said that, great wins against... Both have lost to Ilia Latifi, of course, which is interesting because he's a very durable wrestler type. I thought, you know, we saw submission from Tyson Pedro against Saparek Safarov. That was obviously back in that Perth card in February as well. You know, he's got some decent victories. He's a big guy, Pedro, well-rounded in many ways. You know, he's from a kind of jiu-jitsu, kempo, boxing background. But I think this is a good fight, but I do, for some reason, favour OSP in this contest. The odds of William Hill, 11-10, Ovince St. Preux, and 8-11, Tyson Pedro.
Yeah, I love this fight, number one. Number two, we've started to see a bit of a trend lately where, and Gareth, you know this better than probably anybody else, typically in combat sports, the old get fed to the young. There is almost a 10-year age between these two fighters. And I'm not saying that Ovince St. Preux is past it whatsoever, not at all. However, he's coming off a loss to Ilia Latifi, and like you said, that's the common bond that these two fighters share. But Tyson Pedro has got a bit of a reputation of being a submission artist.
Yeah.
And considering the fact that, you know, OSP is coming off a submission loss, that may play into Tyson Pedro's favor. At the same time, Ovince St. Preux is the master of the Von Flue choke, the only two in UFC history. So I'm really looking forward to this fight. I'm going to favor Tyson Pedro here. You know, he hasn't got too far to travel compared to OSP.
No, I get that.
He's flying in from Sydney, Australia. So, a much shorter flight to take to Singapore than OSP. And he's looked good. I like Tyson Pedro. Aside from the Latifi loss, his performances against Khalil Roundtree and Paul Craig and Safarov have been fantastic. So I'm picking the Aussie to get it done here.
Mm. I don't disagree with you. It could happen. And I think it's a great opportunity to bounce up the rankings for Pedro. The Spanish Samoan, as he is, by the way. That's why he's Tyson Pedro. And he's got that look about him. I think he's... it's great. I love the Samoans coming into the sport anyway. Of course, I love the great super Samoan Mark Richard Hunt. Look, I'm going to go with OSP. Because every time I write him off, he pulls out some kind of fantastic... move and wins a fight. OSP, I'm going for by decision or even a late submission in this fight. But like you say, it would not surprise me if he was overhauled by the younger man by his physicality as well. But I do think that's the thing to do with OSP. Really apply the pressure hard. And if he does it, I mean, I'm a little bit on the fence on this one, but I'm going to go with OSP because I've gone against him so many times and I'm wrong. Probably going to get it the wrong way around this time. But as long as Tyson Pedro, nearly said Tyson Fury, as long as Tyson Pedro applies that pressure tenaciously, I think you're right. I think you may be on the money with that one. And if he does that, we will see. Look, moving to the main event now. Just a couple of minutes left on the podcast to round this one up. Donald Cerrone. Long, decorated career, fan favourite in the UFC, of course. It's been a bit of a, you know, he got the win against Yancy Medeiros, of course, but he had a bit of a tough time with losses on the bounce to Jorge Masvidal, Robbie Lawler and Darren Till, of course, that projected Till into the firmament. But this is a very interesting fight and a great moment for Leon Edwards, the man from Aston, Birmingham, who, for me, looks a real talent. And, you know, as I was saying, like Darren Till, Leon and Conor McGregor, really the only ones riding high at the moment in the UFC from the UK and Ireland. 8-5, the number 11 ranked Donald Cerrone, and 1-2, the number 13 ranked Leon Edwards. Take it away, Mr. Sandu, because I know you're a big fan of Leon Edwards.
I am. I actually spoke to him for a story on ESPN, which is live at the moment on the site, and it's remarkable to me that we could perhaps be seeing a very similar story, a very similar path to what Darren Till took in the last 12 months. Till beat Cerrone in Poland, and then fast forward a few months, he got that amazing opportunity to headline the very first card in Liverpool. And much like Darren Till, Leon Edwards is really driving the bus to try and get a UFC event back to Birmingham. UFC 138, almost 7 years ago, that was the last time the UFC held its one and only event in the Midlands. And now with the likes of Leon Edwards, his brother Fabian Edwards, who's doing great at Bama, you've got Tom Breeze, you've got a nice group of fighters in Midlands who could head with Leon Edwards. Now, again, the theme of the old getting fed to the young. There's a 9-year age discrepancy between the two fighters. I'm favoring Leon Edwards here. I think he's the hungrier, younger fighter. I think Cerrone's been around the block. He's a veteran. And aside from his last outing against Yancy Medeiros, he was riding a 3-fight losing streak. Once again, Leon Edwards and Donald Cerrone had a nice meaty kind of face-to-face earlier today in Singapore. Cerrone's known to pretty much just sign a bout agreement and then just turn up on fight night and try and get the business done. And I spoke to Leon Edwards about this, and he feels as though that could be bad news for Cerrone if that's the kind of, you know, tactic he's once again going to deploy here. Cerrone's known for not really doing too much research on his fighters. You know, well documented, he didn't know too much about Darren Till going into that fight, and we saw how that played out. And reading some comments from Cerrone this week, it seems as though he's doing the same thing. He doesn't know too much about Leon Edwards' background, and I think that could be his downfall. So I'm picking Leon Edwards, the Brit, to get it done in Singapore, which will then break him into that top 10. And then, like you said, Gareth, we're going to have two welterweights, Darren Till and Leon Edwards, at the top end of that division. And it's amazing because they're both in their mid-20s. They could easily be around for the next decade. And you'd like to think that sooner or later, at least one or both of them will either vie for that championship, and then the perfect scenario would be if the two of them fought each other for that welterweight strap in England. So a bit of fantasy booking there along the road, but bringing it back to Singapore, I'm picking Leon Edwards to get it done big time against Cerrone.
Yeah, and England are going to win the World Cup. Right, so you're dreaming. But look, it would be nice to see them in a welterweight fight off. Of course it was for the crown. Of course it was 10 years. I'm not so sure many people are going to last 10 years in the UFC anymore, Mr. Sandu. I really do. I think the rate of change, the rate of development, the rate of evolution. But it's a great dream. And for maybe Conor to move up to welterweight as well and drop into that division would be extraordinary, although they are bigger men than him. Leon Edwards, 6 foot tall. Donald Cerrone, 6 foot tall. It's going to be a fantastic battle. I think Leon Edwards will take it to him. I think Donald has seen better days. I completely agree. I like some of the victories that he's had over very powerful people, like Albert Tumanov, for example. I like his strength. I like Leon Edwards' balance. I like the fact that he's got these abilities that he I like the fact his attack is almost his defense in a way. I like the fact he's trained at AKA. I don't know if he was there when you spoke to him. I like the fact he's got a Birmingham lilt about him and that he's from Kingston, Jamaica originally, because he's going to make it sail. He's 26. He's in the prime of his career. I think he's got good hands, lovely movement. He's been in the sport now 8 years. I think you're right. I think there's a route there that Darren Till took, the win over Cerrone. Cerrone's a marking post for a lot of fighters now, given, you know, the career that he's had, given who he's fought. You know, because you look down his resume, and it resounds. I mean, you know, there are so many big names on his resume. It's as simple as that. You know, from your Benson Hendersons to your Patrick Cotes, I say to your Robbie Lawlers, and it really is a resume to talk home. You know, to take home. You know, Anthony Pettis, Jeremy Stevens. He had all those fights, all those amazing fights he had, and to think he fought Paul Kelly all those years ago as well. By the way. The Liverpool fighter. Anyway, I'm going for Leon Edwards as well. I don't know if I'm swayed slightly by the British bias. The odds with William Hill, 11-10. Sorry, 8-5 is Donald Cerrone. And 1-2 is our man Leon Edwards. Enjoy the fights in Singapore. Enjoy the weekend. I've enjoyed Mr. Chamatkar Sandu with me of ESPN today. Thank you, my friend. It's been great talking with you.
Likewise, Gareth. Much appreciated. And enjoy the rest of your travels in California.
You've been listening to the UFC Buzz podcast with me, Gareth A. Davis, for William Hill. Enjoy the fights. I'll see you next time.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.